that has a focus on genetic susceptibility. There are four presentations that have been submitted, and it basically, I'll sort of describe the story and then say a little bit about what each person will be talking about, but it's a nice example of the synergy and the potential for collaboration that CFAS has provided. Johann Eberhardt, as you know, published a paper this year in Development, which is an example of the approach that that we had hoped CFAS would take, which was to use basic animal models. Johann did his work in zebrafish, screening for genes that might confer susceptibility to developmental toxicity from alcohol. And what he found was that in a particular signaling pathway, actually several now, where there were mutations in certain genes, if a zebrafish had one normal and one mutated gene, its craniofacial structure might be normal, but in the presence of alcohol at quite reasonable concentrations in the tissue, there were significant defects in craniofacial structure, and that if the animal had two copies of the mutant gene, it of course would be worse with alcohol, but by itself it had some similar and also some different craniofacial abnormalities. And this is really the model he used, taking off-the-shelf established mutants in certain signaling pathways and showing that with either normal phenotype or one abnormal gene or two abnormal genes, you could demonstrate going from normal to abnormal in the presence of alcohol during development, or worsening an already abnormal development with facial phenotypes. So that will be the first talk, but the significance of this, which Johann won't talk about in his, but which Leah will talk about in the fourth talk, is taking this through to an analysis of candidate genes in the CFAS population, and I'll get to that in a moment. The second line of research is work that Zhao Doe has done in my lab, and this concerns the effects of alcohol on the L1 cell adhesion molecule, which we believe is another target of alcohol that plays a role in FASD. What Zhao Wei showed was that phosphorylation of a specific residue, or now we've identified several, in the cytoplasmic domain of L1, doesn't change the function of L1 by itself, but abolishes L1 sensitivity to alcohol. And Zhao Wei went on to show that some of the kinases that phosphorylate these particular residues, and phosphorylation, for those who aren't in the business, is a way of adding a charged molecule to a protein to change its structure and its function. That although phosphorylation at these sites is necessary for alcohol to have an effect, removing the possibility of phosphorylation doesn't change the function of L1, but abolishes alcohol's effect. So it's a specific modification of a protein that determines the sensitivity of that protein to alcohol without changing its fundamental function. And we identified two, at least now, several more signaling pathways that regulate this sensitivity of the L1 molecule to alcohol, that don't independently modify the function of L1. It's just something that changes alcohol sensitivity. So the work that Johann did and the work that we did suggested that these pathways might be important in determining also the sensitivity of animals and perhaps also humans to alcohol during development. The work that we did in our lab in collaboration with Kathy and also with Xiaoyu Chen on the more recent work, established also that two very similar strains of C57 mice, the ones that we talked about a number of years ago that Feng Zhou had been working on and Kathy had been working on, differ in their sensitivity to alcohol and its ability to cause ocular defects during development. And that they show similar changes to what we would predict for the activity of those kinases that phosphorylate L1. So the question is, how do you then take that information into a human population? And we don't have very many patients, very many children, affected children. So what's necessary is, because we can't do a sort of genome-wide association study, which needs tens of thousands of people, that what's necessary is to study candidate genes. And what was done was to take the genes that Johan identified, and this work has already been published, and also to take the pathways that we identified and to look at the CSAS cohort, and in this, the sample was restricted to 101 children, all Caucasian, to simplify the first step of the analysis. And then Peter Hammond did his magic with dense surface modeling to come up with a good quantitative phenotype for facial abnormalities. And what Peter then did was to provide these sort of quantitative facial phenotypes to Tatiana and Leah for their genetic analysis. And what they found was that there were significant associations with the platelet-derived growth factor receptor gene, among others, that Johan had identified, and also with the pathway that we've most recently been studying, which is the Stark family kinase pathway. And the association was in the range of about 10 to the minus 7 or 8, all the way to 10 to the minus 4, which was considered significant for the genes that were looked at. So what the four speakers, Johan, Xiaowei, Peter, describing his new and improved quantitative facial phenotypes using dense surface modeling, and Leah Wetherill will present, is really the sequence of ideas that takes you from identification of pathways that regulate sensitivity of a cell or an organism, an animal, to alcohol, all the way to a test of those candidate genes in humans. And we hope they'll accept it. I think it's a nice example of what CFAS can do.
Thank you, Michael. You know, I don't know if Acer still publishes those mini symposiums, but it seemed that would make a very nice article, you know, kind of linking it all together. So maybe I'll try to convince you to do that if Acer still publishes those as a result of the RSA ISPR meeting.
Yeah.
All right.
By the way, this is John. I came in late. Didn't want to interrupt.
No problem. Johan or Leah, do you have anything that you can add or want to say?
Leah isn't on these calls. Sorry.
Oh, all right. All righty. Well, then we can move to the next item. Michael, that sounds great, and I'm really glad that once again you took it upon yourself to have CFAS represented in one of the symposiums, and I would say that it has an excellent chance of getting accepted. So congratulations and thank you. The next, I want to hear get Michael's opinion on the hotels, so while we still have them for five more minutes.
Okay.
You want to
We are going to stick with the dates of travel day, April 6th, have the meeting the 7th and 8th, and half of the 9th, which is Wednesday. I tried to reach out to the three hotels that we normally do. The Legacy, which then turned into the Holiday Inn, is now going to become an even hotel, and it won't be available until the summer. The North Bethesda Marriott cannot accommodate us, so we are at the Rockville Hilton, which we've been at before, and I think everyone has been fine with that. The problem from moving from winter to spring is a significant rate increase. So the rate that they can offer us is $189, which is still below the $224 federal per diem, or we can do $199, which will include the breakfast buffet that was available to us last time. We will still get free Wi-Fi, and the meeting will be held at the Rockville Hilton because the room that we normally use at MIAAA is previously booked by another party. Unless, Dr. Harold, that was the party that you were thinking that you were going to be involved in. Maybe it's available now. Do you know?
I don't know. I can look into it. And
it may be a moot point, too, because I got the $189 because we're having the meeting, so the $189 might disappear if we don't need meeting space. So
I think first question is, do people want a three-day meeting, or would Monday and Tuesday, leaving Tuesday night, work for everybody? But people have to stay until 5 o'clock.
The latest flight from D.C. to San Diego is 5:55.
Like I said, people have to stay till 5. I mean, we'll cut it short if that works for people, but otherwise I think we need the extra half a day.
I can just selfishly say I'd rather have a two-day meeting than a three-day meeting, but getting back to San Diego is challenging because the latest flight is at 5:55.
Yeah, we'd probably have to be done by 3, I should think, at the latest.
I honestly don't think we could accomplish that. I guess we'll have to keep it and cut out early on Wednesday.
What if we start in the evening of the 6th?
Possibility.
Because
it's Sunday, though, right?
Yeah, but people have to travel on Sunday anyway.
Ideas?
But to get in, what's the earliest you can get in on Sunday?
That I don't know off the top of my head. we could get there by dinner time. I know that. We can get there by 5.
Yeah.
What I had sketched out was for the Science Advisory Board to meet Sunday night because some people on the East Coast do fly in Monday morning sometimes.
So, I guess it would be helpful. I mean, do you have a draft of the program you want to do this time, Ed, and about how much time is being allocated for different things?
No, but it's about, I mean, just to go through the projects is a day. And then, to discuss where we are, we'll be halfway through. We're coming up at the end of the year. And I think that there are significant issues that we have to talk about in terms of developmental projects. I think a two-day meeting could do it, but I don't think a one-and-a-half-day meeting could.
But if the advisory board started Sunday night, would that make a mid-Tuesday afternoon departure doable?
Well, the problem, and Jill and I did not confer about this, the problem of having a science advisory board on Sunday works well, except we haven't heard what anyone has to say.
That was a concern for me.
Yeah, I think the Science Advisory Board has to meet after.
Yeah, I agree.
So
what if the Science Advisory Board meets on Wednesday morning?
We can
or
do
Tuesday
that.
Or Tuesday night.
No, we can meet Tuesday night. We've had dinner meetings before.
Yeah, I mean, so we could do that. In reality, though, do people think that a two-day meeting is sufficient? And what we have to do is to make sure that people stay as late as possible on Tuesday if we want to end it.
Ed, if I could make a proposal, I think that one way to compact the process without losing is to have people submit their presentations in advance of the meeting so everybody has had a chance to look at it. And then they can present highlights and leave time for questions. It means more upfront work, but it allows everybody to be sort of caught up on what will be presented and to have a more focused discussion during the time that people will present.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that would be great. You know, we try to do that by having that semi-annual progress report for people to have available beforehand. And I'm not so sure how many people ever really look at it. But perhaps if they had to do their PowerPoint, that might make a difference.
So this is Jill. Prior to that meeting, we're collecting the mid-years now, and everyone will have just submitted on April 1st their progress reports to NIH, which the Science Advisory Board could have copies of. So those are the materials that will be available by April 6th.
Folks, I'm going to have to sign off. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. So let's try to do it then on Monday, Tuesday. The Science Advisory Board will have to stay Tuesday night. And we will try to – I'm trying to get an see what the last time people can fly out on here, but so we'll try that. Now, the next question is, do you want breakfast included in that in your rate? It's a lot cheaper if you do it that way than pay for it, but if you're not going to eat breakfast, then it's a waste of time.
I eat breakfast.
I think it's a good idea. For $10 more a night, I think it's a bargain.
Is that an all or none decision?
I can check with the hotel and see whether or not when people check in, if they want breakfast, that can be like a ticket option. I can ask them that.
Okay.
Less orange juice costs $8. So.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I agree. All right.
Ed, another thing that occurred to me is if we needed extra time, I wonder if we could spend at least a couple hours on, I guess, what would be Monday evening.
Yeah, we could do that. We could just have the depending when we put the agenda together, you know, we could break for a short dinner and then meet again. So we'll fit it into the 2 days, but
I guess what would be helpful is everyone to just do a quick, you know, Travelocity search or something at the end of this call and let us know if there's not a way for you to get back. Wrapping up the meeting by 3 o'clock on Tuesday. Does that seem fair?
Right. I think if you leave before 3, it's a $500 fine.
So just check your itineraries and see if it would be possible for you to stay at the meeting until 3, and if not, get in touch with me and I can look into things.
That's on Tuesday.
Yep, for everyone except for the Science Advisory Board. The Science Advisory Board will leave on Wednesday.
Got it. Okay.
Also, are we thinking of having some external people give talks, or are we going to forego that this time?
No, I think that's a really good idea, and I think last time we had some ideas that people for people who couldn't make it, and I will review those, and if anyone has ideas about bringing people in, that would be great.
Please email us, and we can look into it.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea to get outside input. We've heard from NeuroDevNet. You know, we might. It's been a while since I think the past people have been there, and we could try that. So we will start thinking about that. Thanks, Dale. All right. So any other hotel issues? And can you check on that room and see if we can get it? And
at the NIAAA, you mean?
Yeah.
Sure, but it might affect our room rate. for sleeping rooms if we don't meet at the hotel.
You are the master of negotiation, so
okay.
I leave the part up to you.
But Jill, would we not come out ahead if we could use the room here? The rates might get bumped at the hotel, but
honestly, it all comes down to catering. It's that catering place inside, and then what they offer us. The meeting space is always usually waived if we meet a certain per diem or a certain food minimum. I can look into it.
Okay, and then just I'll say, there's another room that we might be able to get that could accommodate the group. It's in the adjacent building, and I could look into that if we end up wanting to go down that path.
Okay.
You know, we always have problems with the food costs because we really have difficulty catering anymore. So, all right, we'll deal with that.
Ed. Hey, Ed.
Yeah.
Move on. Something we might want to consider, the new director of NIAAA will be on board at the end of January. So we may want to extend an offer for him to come to this meeting to maybe learn more about it. If that's the case, maybe more formal presentations might have to be given, but I just throw it out there as an opportunity.
Yeah, and I've already thought about that. I'm supposed to see George pretty soon, so I can do that personally. They're having a going away party for him here, so I got invited to that. So I will talk to him and see what we can do about that. But that's a great idea. I'll see him at ACNP this week. So, all right.
Another question, Ed, is Ken Warren going to have any continued affiliation with CFAS, or is he stepping away? I simply don't know. I mean, will he be there or want to attend this meeting?
Dr. Warren, I think, has been an integral part of CFAS, and he will always be invited to everything. He cannot have an official role without permission from George, but he will certainly be invited, and his input is always welcome.
Okay, good.
All right. Now, I hope we have, there are two webinar series going on now. I hope some of you got the chance to see Kathy Mitchell. She did a really nice job at presenting an overview of NOFAS and the work that they're doing, and they are going to be continuing. I think I'm doing the next one on the 18th, and as much as I dislike doing webinars, they seem to be what people want to do, and I think it's a way for us to help out NOFAS, and I know that they've contacted several of you, and I thank you for your participation in the NOFAS webinar series. And then we're looking for volunteers for our WebEx presentation, as always. And in January, I guess we have NOFAS and then Elizabeth Sal in February, the facial imaging work in March. Tina Chambers will be in April. And the informatics core will be in May, and we're still waiting to hear from Ken Jones about his availability to do one. Let's see. Now,
Ed, along those lines, what about some of our former developmental project PIs, possibly Claudia, could tell us where her kind of summarize what went on with her project? Are there some opportunities like that, do you think?
There are, and unfortunately you didn't pick the best example, since Claudia and I have been going back and forth a little bit about trying to get a paper out of her developmental project.
Okay, so, well, I just thought I'd throw the thought out there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we need more accountability on these developmental projects. But we could include those. Right now, I think we're good pretty much for the until the renewal, until the next granting year comes up. But I think that's a good idea. I want you to remind you that Jennifer is always soliciting news and events to add to the website. And the last thing is all your reminders about the progress reports and the mid-year progress reports are due. And so I know a number of them come in, and thank you. For those who haven't gotten them in, please do. The publication list is needs to be updated and current, and we need your current IRB or IACUC approval letters so that we can get those submitted with our with our reports. Bill, anything else I forgot there?
Yeah, I just want to clarify one thing. It's, we've gone away from the publication Google Doc list. That's all done now by PubMed, but this is rather the PDF publication list from the MyNCBI that Dr. Harold talked about on the last conference call.
All righty. All right, so we have about 25 minutes left, and we can have updates on progress. So anyone volunteer to, anyone have any really exciting new things? Remember, NIAAA is listening in. No one has any exciting things. Well, then, I'm going to recommend.
Well, I can talk. I don't know if we've talked about this before, but we just submitted an interesting. Well, we submitted two papers. They're both interesting, but one which I thought was really interesting was looking at the with it, whether we could find whether there are multiple neurobehavioral profiles within the fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, and our hypothesis was that there would be, and we just submitted that. We're hoping to get some good news sometime soon.
Sarah has been very prolific as of late, or for the whole year, so she's certainly got things going in, and. Sarah, you might want to send some of those papers around or send them to Jennifer.
Well, they're not, they have not been peer-reviewed. All the authors have seen them.
Some of the ones that you've had accepted, I mean, so get them online.
Okay.
All right, that
yep.
might work. The other thing is I've been looking over the progress on the various projects, and I would recommend that everybody look at what their goals were for the year and where they are in relation to those goals now that we're halfway through the funding period, the current funding period. For the most part, everybody's doing very well, but there are some projects that I would find it difficult to see how they will make up their yearly goal in the remaining months. So, I don't know if you keep track of that on a personal level, but I would urge everyone to look at what you said you were going to and look at how much you've actually accomplished toward those goals and try to remediate what I view are some deficiencies in some of the projects that certainly increase their output. Or data collection. And so I didn't mean to interrupt, but it was on my mind, and I got these graphs in front of me. So, all right, Kathy, any new and exciting great things going on there?
Well, I think one of the most exciting things is that we've had access to this really marvelous that is an agonist called AG, and it's going to be very useful. Further, whether hedgehog is a.
You're athlete. Cutting out on me, Kathy. I don't know. If
yeah.
Same thing here.
Yep.
Kathy, you're cutting out.
All right, I'm on off of speaker. So now, can you hear me better?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. So what I was saying is that we have gotten access to a compound that we call SAG. It's a smoothened antagonist, a smoothened agonist. So it upregulates hedgehog signaling. So the reason we were interested in it is to see if, in fact, we can ameliorate some of the problems that alcohol causes using this agonist, since we think that the hedgehog pathway is being interfered with by alcohol. And we've got some really nice preliminary results with our sort of dose response study, showing that we can, as expected, make a lot of extra digits in mice with this compound at the time when we expect alcohol to make too few digits. It's a nice, easily countable, a discernible endpoint. And so I think we're going to open up lots of new doors for research opportunities with this compound. It's pretty expensive, and we've got a nice collaboration with a fellow at North Carolina Central who has been able to provide it to us. So anyway, that's our exciting news.
Okay, and I have a nice holiday party next week or 2 weeks from now.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Chris or Elizabeth?
Let's see. I think November was somewhat of a slow month, probably because of the holiday, but overall people are pretty close to their goals. That may be another reason people have slowed down a little with recruitment, but I think we're on a good track to meeting our goals for the year.
Anything new and exciting?
Nothing new and exciting. We are currently making some changes to a paper a longitudinal fMRI paper that we submitted earlier in the year. This is our third journal that we're at, but it's a pretty good journal, and we're hopeful that it'll be published within the next couple of months.
And I'm not sure if you're in the loop about this, but do you know of any continued talks between Elizabeth and James Reynolds on collaborating on imaging data between NeuroDevNet and CFAST?
I don't know the details. I know they've been speaking, but I don't know what the current status of that is.
Okay.
I'll check with her and ask her to report back.
All righty. Jeff?
Nothing specifically new. I've been
focused
on
a fair amount of... No new and exciting data?
Sorry?
Anything new on choline that's not part of CFAST, but we're all interested in?
Yeah, that's going to be wrapping up at the beginning of the year, so that's kind of where I've been focusing, is getting all of that data in shape as soon as we break the blind in the spring to be able to report on that. So.
Okay. Tina, did you get on? I guess not. And how about Tatiana or Peter?
I'm here. I've just come on because I was at another meeting that ran over.
Peter, anything new and exciting?
I don't know about exciting. Mike has now got a prototype system working that combines two models. That is, you can do face and philtrum, or face and skull, or face and brain, or whatever. And that prototype's working, and he's going to start testing that on some data from Sandy Jacobson. So using the face data that we analyzed before, plus some of her MRI images of those same children. I've just done some new work, kind of unrelated to the FAST work, on face shape and copy number variation, but it may have an application in the mouse area, I don't know. This is predicting face shape in the duplication from a deletion, and vice versa, and related things. We've been working on the U.S. Caucasian data and finding the facial differences a lot more subtle than in the Sandy Jacobson data, and showing that really we've got to home in on the philtrum much more than we did before. And Mike's new software combining face and philtrum is actually proving to be very effective in that. Hmm. And I think that's all that's new.
All right, because I had talked to Tatiana about trying to do something similar to what you did with Sandy's data and the neuropsych, but doing it in the Caucasian sample or in the U.S. sample.
Yeah.
And trying to see if there was some type of algorithm that could put these faces on a Likert scale or something more FAS-like, more control-like. And then we start dealing with that deferred group as well and see how that group fares out. And, you know, I think that study that you did with the Jacobson data was really remarkable. And but I'd like to see if it replicated in another sample, and one that may be more relevant to the U.S. public health policy.
Yeah. So that's exactly what Mike's working on now.
Okay, great, because I think that would be a real significant advance. And I haven't checked on how well that paper is getting cited, but I personally think it was an important paper. So
I agree with that. And if I may, Peter, I've got a question for you about it. So I guess it was the control group that kind of mapped with the syndromic kids. Did they have features in the face that the dysmorphologist picked up, but just they didn't have enough of them qualify as syndromic?
They were basically not strong enough to be put into the FAS or PFAS subgroup.
They might have been just short one feature, perhaps, or...
Or more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. But, you know, I think if an algorithm could be developed to kind of give you an idea of how FAS-like or how control-like you were, then we could start looking at all those relationships between brain behavior and face.
Yeah.
And I think that would be just, you know, an incredible wealth of data there. And I don't know how easy that is to do or how hard it is to do, but it certainly would, you know, go a long way. Helping out the looking at that relationship between face, brain, and behavior. All right, Deepak, not here. All right.
Yeah, I'm here.
You're there.
I think, you know, we did get some new stuff, which I haven't told everybody, but the new stuff is dealing with another gene which you are working on, which are very relevant to the circadian gene.
You have to talk up. You're very fuzzy.
Okay. I think it's my phone. But I was talking about, you know, we got some good preliminary exciting data with another gene, which is very closely related to the PLOF genes, PARP genes, which we are working on.
Mm-hmm.
And these genes is POMC gene, which I have done a lot of work on in rats looking at the transgenerational effect, and these genes goes from gets hypermethylated and goes from generation to generation in rats, goes to all the way to third generation. So I thought, considering, you know, we have some samples left, so I thought I'd check that out with what Tatiana sent us with a salivary sample. And very excitingly, FAS, as well as the alcohol-exposed one, had in a very high hypermethylation, just like the way we find in rats. So it's really getting excited. So, and these CLOF genes, PARP2 genes, and POMC genes, they are closely related, because I also saw that both hypermethylation of these two genes in human alcoholics, getting some samples from Rajita Sinha from Yale, and we find the similar changes in both genes in human alcoholic, and it looks like it's persistent also in fetal alcohol exposed human patients, both alcohol exposed as well as the FAS. So that's kind of very exciting. So I think Tatiana and I've been talking, and she's sending me more samples as well as the longitudinal study, which will be very important, because the question is whether or not it's a very initial changes, or does this persist for a long time. If this persists for a long time, it could be a very exciting biomarker. That's the way I feel about, because the changes is two to three fold changes, so it's a big change. So I'm really very excited about it, and I'm also working to get those plasma blood samples, which I'm waiting for a long time. I haven't received them. Hopefully, Tina is going to send it to us. And I think whatever we are finding, I'm very excited. And I have a feeling that it might turn to be a very good biomarker. But again, without the sample.
Sometimes it takes a long time to get these human samples, Deepak. You're going to have to be a little patient on that.
I am patient, and as you know, I'm working on it. And I think we got really, really exciting data. And I'm really excited Tatiana is providing me more samples. And I think it's going to be very good to see these kind of changes with these more samples. And if it is persisting longitudinal study, I think we got something very good.
Okay. Johan. He's not there. All right. Kathy, how are you today?
I'm good.
Anything new and exciting at NOFASH? You're having your thank-a-thon today.
Oh, wrong Kathy.
Oh.
I was a little confused because...
Kathy, I'm sorry. Did Kathy hang up? She has a thank-a-thon today. They're thanking all of their donors.
Ed, I'm here. I was on mute. I'm sorry. I was going to let Kathy talk about NOFASH.
I would have all glowing things to say.
Oh, thank you. Well, just briefly, I mean, we're putting together the schedule for the year of our webinars. We ran into a few glitches just with didn't hear back from a couple people, and then we had to make a few changes. But I hope to finalize that hopefully this week, and I'm going to get that out to Jill. So if anybody wants to see, I think we'll have it on our website as well. And also, Tina and Sarah have, again, I don't know if this is part of CFAST or not, but they have contacted me and developed a survey for some of our birth moms and maybe for all of our parents. I'm not quite sure. I have to kind of find out what they're thinking, and maybe Sarah can speak to this if she's still on the call. But I know Tina was interested in looking at the birth weight and growth of children with FAS or an FASD, and the question being, do they continue to stay small or short, and do they eventually become overweight? So those were some of the questions that they were trying to get at, and I have certainly offered to them, as to any of the researchers, access certainly to the birth mothers and certainly to all of our, our entire database where we can be helpful. And so we're working to finalize that survey. And also I did want to remind everybody, if you have any news hot off the press, any, publications that are released, remember to forward those over to NOFAS. And certainly we will feature them and be in our roundup, be tweeting about them, posting it on Facebook. But we can also send out press releases from NOFAS as well, trying to get some media coverage. So I think that's all I have.
Well, the survey sounds exciting. Can you hold off on that, though? Because I've been talking to Ken about some other things that we might like to get information on. So I'd hate to bother you twice about that.
Sure. Yeah. We're just in the stages of, draft, putting together a draft. And certainly, absolutely.
Yeah. How recent was Tina in touch with you about that?
Pardon?
How recent was Tina in touch with you about that?
We've been working on this for a while. This is Sarah, but I think she's been in touch with Kathy somewhat recently.
Yeah,
we have the survey all ready to go.
Yeah, when I went out to San Diego, we were talking about it.
Yeah, no, I know.
It's a question that comes up, so we had discussed it then.
Yeah, it came as a result of the camp trip.
No, I don't think so. We've been working on it from since before then, Ed, but... idea is to collect some pilot data from the from NOFAS that we could then use to develop a better survey or a more detailed survey that we could do as part of CFAS. So that's how it ties into CFAS.
And we have our little communication issue. Okay. All right. John.
Yes.
Any comments?
I have no comments other than to, you know, reiterate your concerns that everybody pay attention to their progress. You know, the midpoint is an important point to start figuring out how things are going. And that's all.
Okay, and I hope you get through your bankruptcy okay.
Oh, fine. Yeah, I'm happy for that, actually.
All right.
Can't get any worse now.
Dan, any?
Not at the moment. I want to hear a bit more about Johan's data, upcoming data here, and I may have some thoughts about some overlap between Kathy and Johan's projects going forward.
Can I ask you to email them rather than do that here because we're running out of time?
Yep.
And I want to hear from Dale and Bill about NIAAA and what's going on there.
Well, it's not that different than in the past. We're doing good, and we're excited to have George Koop come on board in the coming month or so. And I know Ken is pretty delighted that he gets to step down out of the hot seat and go back to his acting director position. We do read these interim progress reports. They're not official, but it does help us get back up to speed on your projects and keep up with y'all. We did have a discussion when Ed was away for the last call about the public access policy, and hopefully people found something useful in what I was saying. Just to follow up, you know, you're several months out of, you know, putting together your official progress report, so this is a really good time to figure out if you have some publications that are not yet compliant so that they don't trip up your and delay your funding. Jennifer raised what's probably a somewhat not very common problem, but some alcohol research and health publications not getting sent up to or to PubMed Central, and they're working on it here on this end. That's NIAAA's journal, and so there's a lot of irony in that, I think. But that is an instance where an author could simply submit their author manuscript to the NIH manuscript submission system, which is a stepping stone to getting it into PubMed Central. Being that it's a governmental publication, it is in the private sector and isn't regulated by copyright. So that's a workaround, and when they finally get their act together and put the final version up, it'll just supersede the manuscript that the author submitted. I'll stop there. But ask any questions anytime, offline or online.
All right. Any other comments? Well, thank you all, and Jill will be sending out meeting stuff and get those progress reports and things in. So thanks, and have a happy holiday.
Thanks, guys.
You all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.